Hi everyone, the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in the following podcast belong solely to the host and its contributors. They are not necessarily the views of our employers, organizations, committees, or other group or individual.
I'm David Campbell.
And I am Jordan Bullock.
And I'm Joseph Whitney. This is Brewing with BIM,
where we talk about construction processes, technology, BIM, and beer.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of Brewing with BIM. I'm Joe Whitney. With me as usual is Jordan and Dave. What's going on, fellas?
What's up, Joe?
What's up?
Well, hey, what's up, guys? Hey, guys, I'm thrilled today. Today we actually get to revisit an episode that we kind of botched. For those of you guys that kind of tuned into us while we were at AU, we had a few guests and the audio came out like shit, very unusable. So for that reason, we've invited our guests back, and first and foremost, the one that we're probably most anticipated for, Mr. Carlos Caminos. I know we had a great conversation about AI and technology, and you know, welcome back, man. Appreciate it, you coming and joining us to bring this back.
Listen, thank you guys. It's always fun getting together with you guys, like minds. You know, it's hard to beat. I appreciate you guys.
Yeah, man, dude, there's a growing population of technologists, it seems, out there, and man, you are definitely pushing the boundaries in like all aspects of construction. I know we're getting to this in a little bit. We've talked about Pro-E a little bit already ahead of the call on the manufacturing side, and then, you know, the Scan to BIM and all that other stuff you do. So we'll dive into that here in just a minute. Before we get started, dude, I got to ask you, what are you drinking?
So today I got ready for you guys. I grabbed Breckenridge today.
Oh.
Yeah.
Heck yeah, man. Nice.
Yeah,
are you drinking it neat? How are you drinking it?
Oh no, one large ice, you know.
Yeah. Heck yeah, King Cube. Nice, yeah. Dude.
Yeah, that's been my I won't say my drink of choice. Bourbon is my drink of choice. If I could show you a picture, I probably have like 15 bottles right next to my.
Dude.
That's impressive, but you are no Rob Sinclair, my friend.
No, I'm not. I can't
afford to be a Rob Sinclair.
No, I'm like your classic story. You know, if I were a drug dealer, I would do all the drugs. I can't. I buy one and I finish it. I'm like,
yeah.
He's like, oh, I'm saving this one and I got this. And he's got like Pappy and, you know, yeah, all the hard to find stuff. And I'm like, dude, you've got tens of thousands of dollars, maybe over $100,000 by now, of rare whiskey. What the hell are you doing? He's like, oh, I'm just, you know, saving it. I drink the ones I like. And I'm like, dude, all this would be gone.
That's why I don't have a wine cellar in my house, dude. I can't keep wine long enough to actually put it in a cellar. If I buy a bottle or two, that shit is getting drank in like the next, you know, few days to a week. It's going.
Same.
Well, speaking of that, David, what are you drinking, my friend?
Ah, dude. So I'm in Virginia, borderline North Carolina today. And, you know, had to stop off at one of the ABC Virginia, because they're state-based liquor stores, and found Virginia Distillery Company. I found it quite interesting, though. I got a couple of the little bottles, the shooters, to try, because they have a port cask and a cider cask finished whiskey, but they actually blend Scotch and American whiskey together. And then, you know, finish them. So I thought that was quite interesting. So that's what I'm sipping on, the port cask finished first, and then I'll try the cider.
Nice.
What about you, Joe? Nice, what are you drinking?
Oh, dude, all right, man, I'm going to disappoint you guys. So Dave got me some really nice bottles, gift set of Heaven's Door, Bob Dylan's whiskey.
Yeah, dude.
And it was a set, has several of them in it. I've had a day today. I found out last minute it was President's Day. My kids were off. You know, anyways, they've been home with me. So I'm on the lighter side right now because I've still got to go hang out with them after this. I'm drinking just Michelob Ultra. But that's it. At the end of the night, I'm going to finish up with some of that beautiful whiskey you got me, my friend.
Nice.
Heck yeah, dude. Heck yeah. What about you, Jordan?
Yeah, don't get the babysitter drunk. I have a nice blended Canadian whiskey, actually, that I mixed into an old fashioned. So I'll be sipping on that throughout the episode. I'm excited to be meeting Carlos for the first time and diving into his story and some fun topics. And yeah, let's go ahead and get into it.
Yeah, well, we'll have to connect you guys in person after all this, man. We'll get together at Rob's or something and share some of his whiskey. Well, that said, man, we've had a great conversation, Carlos, in the past, several great conversations. But at AU, we were talking about AI and all the technology that's coming out. And you and Dave,
data analytics,
you guys, like, just your eyes were just on fire, man. You guys kind of engulfed the conversation. It was great to have you guys but going on all these tangents and connecting all these, you know, obscure thoughts. So it was great. I wish and I hope that we can captivate some of that in this episode. You guys, you know, again, I apologize about the poor audio, but hey, man, I just want to dive into it. You know, first off, let me ask you a question. What did you think of AU this year as opposed to last year?
Me?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. You.
Listen, I loved it. I had a great AU. It's one of the best yet that I've had. But I'm spoiled this year. You know, I had three presentations. I had my colleague Josh Wilson came with me, and between us, we co-authored each other's presentations. He got highest rated class. I got one of the highest rated speakers. We network really well. We're in a position right now where we get a lot of attention. So it was great. It was a lot of meeting new faces, talking new technology. I mean, you really want to go out there, it's out there, you know, so I can't complain. One of the best.
I think this year over, or last year rather, over the previous years, obviously was more beneficial just because one of being back, it was back in Vegas. We didn't have the remote thing to deal with. And then we had a city that everybody was used to and wanted to show up for. So I think we had a good show out. And then they showed up, man. They brought the robots, the little AI robots there. I don't know if you went to the Sphere and saw the robots and the AI in there, dude. It was just so cool to, if it, you know, it was on everybody's mind. Like every other word was AI this, AI that. Mm-hmm. So it was good to have it like showed up and represented very well at AU as well. So I don't know, man. I think Vegas is going to be hard to beat. I'm excited for San Diego. This
I'm super
year,
excited but, for San Diego, yeah. Dude.
But yeah.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Yeah.
I mean, come on, you talk about technology. We got Silicon Valley out there, you know?
Yeah, dude. I mean, that's what I'm thinking, man. I don't know. I guess I'm a little biased just because I got to see AU before COVID in Vegas. And to me, I don't know if anything will ever compare, you know, to like the AU block party and the live band playing outside and dueling piano bars, you know, stuff like that. But in all honesty, man, if they're going to one up it, in my mind, it's in the Silicon Valley because there's so much technology out there.
San Diego's
so many technology
like 8
leaders.
Hours, or not 8 hours. Silicon Valley is like 7 hours north or 6 hours north of San Diego. It's quite a haul, man.
Close enough. I mean, dude, yeah, I went to AU, a couple years ago? Well, no, a few years ago. And this, I remember one guy, I can't remember his name, but this dude drove a Tesla across the country to go to, you know, to go to AU.
Are you talking about Vegas?
Yeah, in Vegas, dude drove across the country to go to Vegas, and he drove his Tesla and documented it all. But I think he was actually scanning with it. I got to look him up again. I always love to see what AU brings. You know what I mean? Because there's always different types of technology, evolving technology. I remember my first AU I went to, I got so excited, dude, when I first saw a concrete printing robot and, you know, the machines that just fold out metal studs like right in front of you. I thought that was insane, you know.
I think
but
both those showed up first time at AU 2018. And I think that's the one you're referencing.
Yeah, dude.
The electric bus was there, maybe.
Yeah, dude. Right? The bus was there, too. Yeah. Yeah. I still love that bus. Oh, my God. I love that bus. But yeah, man, I mean, I just look forward, you know, I think last year's was really good. I mean, obviously AI was a big talking point, but I also, go ahead.
I was going to say, it got people thinking. The AI piece definitely got people thinking because like you and I did early on, as soon as the ChatGPT conversation started happening, our wheels were spinning and we were like, oh, how can we integrate this? How can we integrate that? And then it got to a point, I think we were at a conference, Advancing Technology something in Chicago. I don't remember. Somebody, you know, you had a, Dave gave this great presentation. You had like 20 people at the booth afterwards coming, asking questions about AI, how we, you know, segregated the data, and what we thought we were doing was segregating the data. But actually, it doesn't matter what you do for the data segregation part. ChatGPT still feeds it back to its public sector system.
Yeah, it was before enterprise. Yeah,
well, it was.
Yeah.
So now you can do enterprise and silo that data. But anyways, now at AU, I think we had gotten to a point where that part of the conversation, the who owns the data and, you know, training your own AI model, you know, large model, language models, AI models, all that sort of stuff, like getting to that part was already on people's minds. Like, we've already passed the wow factor of ChatGPT while everybody's still marketing buzzwords, this and that. Businesses, especially in the AEC industry, was starting to think about, okay, well, what does this actually mean and how can we make this usable? And I think that was a good part about AU. And I know we had talked about the data analytics piece quite a bit at AU, but getting to the part where AI, and again, you know, we're a few months removed even from AU, so the conversation is still even more, even more.
Say that three times fast.
Yeah, I know. AI, AU.
Add it to AI at AU.
Conversation's morphed even more, right? To where we've gotten to the point now where it's like, oh man, like things that we thought were popular or possible are actually possible and actually already in practice. There's an AI BIM company. They're going to be on one of my team's calls next week. And they've, you know, again, they've segregated the data. They own it, not ChatGPT or whatever language model they're using. It actually, you know, does a lot of the, you know, BIM management. I'm going to find out more about it next week, obviously. But like, there are companies now popping up that solely focus on AI in construction.
Yep, exactly, dude. That was, I was just, oh, sorry. Go ahead, Carlos.
No. Yeah, I mean, I'm going to talk about the dark side of AI, right?
Because I'm that's exactly where I wanted to go with this, too. It's so funny. Like, I mean, so I love all the AI talk, but at the same time, it's frustrating because in all, like, guys, it's a buzzword at this point. It is. It's a buzzword, and it's only for the face value of AI, and that's for natural language processing, Joey, as you kind of pointed out, right? Like, we're starting to see the expansion. I mean, have you guys saw, what is it, Sora? And they're, you know, they're producing like AI videos with OpenAI now. And, you know, that's also, we're seeing, you know, some of the functionality kind of expanding. But even then, dude, it's so surface level. When you actually look at what AI is, right? And it's funny, but I'll have this conversation all the time. Like, you know, we'll talk about AI and then somebody will have a conversation about machine learning. And they think they're two separate things. They're not. It's really a subset. Machine learning is a subset or a subtype of AI. Artificial intelligence is broken down into several, you know, subtypes, like your natural language processing, the videos, the machine learning, the machine learning algorithms. All of that is a part of AI, right? And it's really when we start to expand past, I mean, obviously there is a huge benefit for natural language processing. Like, that's, it is huge, right? And being able to communicate back and forth, like whether you're working in Revit, whether you're working in Dynamo, whether you're working in Word, you know, whatever it is, obviously that can be a benefit to you. But really, when we start to introduce, I mean, and the power of AI is going to be when we introduce that data to it. And when we start to enable the other pieces of AI in that workflow, right? Because the only thing I don't like right now is that they're still somewhat disconnected. Like, even in that, oh, sorry, Carlos, I just saw you had your hand up, brother.
No, man, I want to jump in right there. Yeah, let's start adding the data. What data? Internal data, external data? What are you scraping? What are you working on? What are you designing? What kind of ideas you're looking at, right? Because that's the dark side of AI, right? Because there's nothing controlling it right now. I work developing processes for a manufacturing firm using Fusion 360 Manage. We could easily put steps in there, go scrape for this. What's the best idea for that? What's the best manufacturing process for that? Or this, or that, or internal. So how about proprietary information with AI? how are you going to take care of that?
So that's a good question, man, because proprietary, I mean, that's just like what Joe was talking about. Now we're starting to see these focused environments for AI, right? I mean, when we started first looking into ChatGPT, OpenAI, even when you start looking at Google and some of the other platforms that there are out there, a lot of it is unsecured. You're building a model that's not yours. You're not going to own that, right? Now, we have seen, like, ChatGPT has now, they've morphed, right? They've kind of evolved to give you ChatGPT Enterprise. And we're starting to see people actually building their own AI. And that's what I think, dude, in all honesty, everybody listening out there, you know, you can pretty much compare this to everything that we do in life, right? Right. If you think about medicine, if you think about food, you think about anything that we do, is medicine a blanket for everyone? No, it's not. We're all different, right? Every company, every general contractor, every architecture company, yes, you may do some things the same, but a lot of you are different. You're so different in the way that you do things. And the best way to get the most value out of your data is to use your data. It's to build your own model. So you know what to expect. You know what to train it. Now, I'm not going to say that there's not, you know, a good shortcut out there that we could get a good generalized model and then start to train it from there. But at the same time, if you think about how much, like, if you could train your own model focused on your company, what you do, and what, I mean, honestly, that's going to perform so much better for you than something that would be out of the box and you're trying to, you know, match things together, essentially.
Yeah.
I mean, that's my opinion, right? I mean,
right,
in my
right,
mind.
Yeah.
No, in my mind.
You're 100% on point with that, but you can also enhance that, right? By looking at mm-hmm. other ideas and concepts and similar processes, competitors, right? Like things
that's
that are
definitely
out there.
True.
You know, that's I think it's clear what the benefit is of AI, right? And you pointed that, you went straight for it. I think the gray area is how about all of those unprotected areas, right? So where does IP end as soon as you publish it? So nobody's going to share information anymore? Like, what? This is going to change. This is going to change a lot of things. There's a lot of data out there that companies have been collecting, even on us, our behaviors, styles, designs. It goes a little bit further than that, right?
And I love this talking point.
Yeah, and we don't know where that's going to go.
No,
well, it's
we
been
don't
going somewhere for a long time.
Oh yeah.
Well, I'm sure you remember, like 20 years ago, the Target stories about, like, predicting teen pregnancies because of and targeting kid the teen pregnancy with. This is a big news story in Texas. Sorry, 20, 30 years ago, where they were tracking what the person was looking at in the store, on the apps, on the, you know, whatever, and sending coupons for, like, baby diapers and all that sort of stuff. And it was like a teen, and the dad got mad and went to Target manager and said, "You stop sending these to my kid, blah, blah, blah." And then it turns out that the kid was actually pregnant. And anyways, there's this whole thing, and it's all based on, like, our credit card companies have been tracking all the information, your now social media, internet, cookies, like everything is tracking information, sells it to, you know, Experian, Expedia, Mosaic, Mosaic's the company that one of them has that develops psychographics based on you and your buying patterns, where you want to live, what you want, how
we've
you
had
vote.
This conversation.
Crazy,
yeah, dude. Yeah.
But this is what I used to focus on, man. Yeah, it's what I used to focus on the GIS side. But now we're starting to see it even more. And what is that going to mean for the AI side? But right. I did have something I wanted to touch on real quick before I digress. Digesting this beer, man. That's what's going on, brother. You guys were talking about the dark side of AI. And there is one dark side of AI that you guys did not hit on just yet. I'm sure we'll get to it. But that's data validity. The output is not always actionable or accurate, rather.
Yeah.
And in fact, we're at a point now where we almost spend twice as much time trying to read through and figure out how to, comb through and actually vet the data that it's given us. Yes. You know, that you probably could have research. Yeah, just done the research to begin with. Do you guys remember, Carlos, do you use Bluebeam at all?
Yep.
So there's this tool in there called Visual Search.
Yes.
So if you do a visual search on, say, a toilet or, you know, a server rack, whatever it is, you've got a common item in there. You do a visual search on it. It'll give you a count, obviously. You will spend more time or as much time, actually, and I'm not knocking Bluebeam. It's great technology, the OCR stuff. But looking at the time.
Going back through to verify it.
Yeah, yeah. The time that it takes for you to actually go back and actually do a count and verify that that's actually right, so you're not messing up your estimates, you could have just counted in the first place. You know, you could have done the date, the research, and done it yourself the first time to make sure you had a right, you know, correct number.
All right. And this is where Dave and I are going to take off. And that's why I don't use that stuff for that. That's why things should get modeled. You need valid data that you can report on, not Bluebeam, some PDF.
No, you know, dude.
It does some things really well, but you bring that up and I'm going to be like, yeah, you deserve to spend all that time doing that.
Well, so the wall contractor, you know, or whatever, well, right? You
actually,
know,
guys, I think
he's not modeling.
I think this actually goes back to your previous point, Carlos, dude. I wanted to dive into that because there is a huge has a huge impact on our industry, IP, right? Think about an architect, and Joey, to your point there, right? One of these subcontractors, he's not going to have, you know, design software, right? They're probably going to be looking at a PDF. Well, in all reality, most of our industry is actually just getting a PDF because a lot of times the architects, the MEP designers, the Revit model, it is their IP. Essentially, when they create a IFC model from it, you know, a lot of times they will try to create an IFC or they print to PDF preferably because the model is their IP. Now, let's think about that for a second, right? And with Carlos's point of how we're seeing a shift, and, you know, I honestly get it. I know we play the litigation hot potato game all the time. But there's also so many tools that I see out there in terms of, you know, coordinating models, aggregating data, you know, pulling these models apart and actually utilizing the data in them, because there is so much data there, right? And we talk about BIM and its benefits. BIM is really only beneficial with the information in that model, in that, you know, environment. If there's no information, then it's not value, right? It's really not valuable at all. So we start thinking about this shift, man. And I love AI, and I love being able to connect, you know, everybody together. Cause in my mind, I'm almost like a data hippie, right? I really think I understand, like, IP, I do. And you guys, you know, companies do a certain thing a certain way, and they make money from it. And that is, you know, the American dream in a way. Like, that's really the way it's supposed to work. But at the same time, I also, like you said earlier, Carlos, I feel like people should be able to share, be able to talk to competitors, to be able to, you know, hey, we're doing this with this data. We're doing that. If there is a benefit, and this is one of the big talking point I wanted to go into here, guys, especially with construction and when we start talking about IP.
I'm going to add to that. I've got some experience.
All right. So with construction and IP, guys, let's think about that for a second. When you're trying to build, like Carlos said, from a PDF, you're trying to build a building from a 2D document that really has no data in it. Yes, I can open up Bluebeam Review. I can do some takeoffs. I can do some markups, some basic layout. You know, there are tools.
It has all of the Revit data in it, man. What are you talking about?
Brother, pause. When you're talking about a Bluebeam PDF versus an actual, like, let's talk about it being hosted in, you know, from my experience, Docs, right? I can open up that model. I can view it. I can actually click on walls. I can click on doors. Even in the 2D environment, I can click on anything inside of that model and pull all of the metadata, any shared parameters, anything that's inside of that model. I instantly have access to all of it. And at that point, I can export and start aggregating that data, whether it's through a data extraction or it's through, oh gosh, what is it? There's an API for data. I can't remember which one it was now. Good Lord, I'm sorry, I'm blanking on it. It's been a long day. But
you're talking about on ACC?
Yeah, on ACC and APS, on the Autodesk Platform Services, even bigger than ACC, brother. Let's expand it past ACC.
What, like IFC?
Exact. Well, IFC actually getting into the Revit model, getting into the Civil 3D file, getting into the AutoCAD model, like actually pulling information from the design program to aggregate that with all of the rest of your, you know, data that you're pulling in, right? And I mean, I know Carlos is going to go on a long one because this is such a good like topic, guys. It really is. For how we're translating data, are we setting each other up for success in this industry? If you're really passing over the lowest level of data that you can get by with, right? By contractual agreements, I get that. But start to think about that, guys, as you know, we're talking about AI, we're talking about data analysis. There's so much further that we can go when we start to open up those barriers. Now, Jordan and I have talked about this too. There is a way to trim down at least what's in that model, your proprietary information, right? Start thinking about ways to trim that down, but also ways to benefit those down the line. And I'm going to give it up to Carlos and Jordan because I know these guys are waiting to get in.
Go ahead, Jordan. We can talk all day. It's your turn.
Oh, yeah. No, you're good. Well, I want to piggyback. I mean, there's a ton that's already been said, and I didn't want to interrupt anyone talking, but yeah, well, just like you guys were talking about, so I guess starting off, you know, getting into the actual language models, the data extractions, the connectors, just like you're talking about, Dave, especially when it comes to our industry and BIM environments, you know, working with Revit, working with, you know, IFC files, all these different, you know, BIM datas out there. The information and the models that we're loading into these platforms are only as good as the data that we input manually into our models or design within our models.
Yes, sir.
You know,
garbage in, garbage out.
How many people, exactly, garbage in, garbage out. But in addition to that, all the additional information we're loading into it, we're even starting to see now, and just having ChatGPT out for, you know, a couple of years, where all of these outputs that are being created by the essentially platforms that are also feeding information back in are starting to create feedback loops and echo chambers of all that data and information. It's basically out one ear and then loaded into either the same model or a similar model, or models are starting to copy other models, and all of that data is starting to loop where, you know, that garbage in, garbage out system that we talk about, you know, feeding our, you know, language models or feeding our, you know, analytical, you know, information models, like all of this data that we're inputting into these machines are beginning to create kind of echo chambers, loops. And if our data is not quality, we're not going to be getting quality out of it. So it's very important that as we go into this, I mean, there's a few other points I want to make about, like, you know, as we're going through and trying to actually extract the data, now we're working with quantitative data and all of that additional information kind of going through, where you're trying to extract basically quantitative properties. Most of the time you're trying to recreate different properties across your entire board. It's very good if you're working with a small amount of data, but when we start getting into these larger amounts of data, being able to kind of limit and put boundaries on all of the different sides of your language models that you're working with, it's just getting more and more difficult. And I think it's absolutely insane the amount of information that we're trying to process already and connect to. I think there's definitely going to be benefits to it in the long run, but being able to start limiting this, I mean, it's only as good as kind of the program and how it's developed and what we're giving it as boundaries as far as what it views as quality data and what it's viewing as, you know, essential data. If I'm, you know, logging man hours on a job, you know, that's pretty much quantitative in, quantitative out, and getting a little bit easier to kind of like limit and set my boundaries on a specific platform. But when we start working with, you know, large Revit models and all the inputs and outputs of data and, you know, architectural systems, structural systems, MEP systems, especially working with structural, you know, it's only as good as the data that's in there. If, you know, that's even off as a hair, we're going to start running into issues.
Well, it's going to come down to standards, right? It's going to come down to, you need to define what you want as a result, right? So I've been very fortunate. This is my second situation where at a big scale, we need to kind of define what's the data that the company needs to report on different type of deliverables and analytics. I'll tell you my first experience at an energy company. We started very small engineering, design engineering, that kind of went over into construction. We had defined those pretty well. So construction kind of adopted what we had, and talking about some of that information, when people started understanding what we were delivering, because we delivered models for construction and they were being exposed to, we were owner operators. So then we were sharing that information with vendors, which we knew was a need, right? Because they need to work for us and help us accomplish all these things. You know, legal, you know, brought me into a meeting one time, this big meeting with people. Well, what do we do? You know, what can we do with the data or whatever? I'm like, there's not too much we can do with the data to protect it, because at the end of the day, they can measure it. The process, any smart guy can figure out the process that we're doing here. You know, equipment there, and, you know, you're scrubbing something here or scrubbing something there. It's not difficult to figure out. I said, what you need to put in place is NDAs with your vendors and make sure that they have NDAs with their vendors. That's really the only protection that you're going to have. Anything can, you know, if you don't think about it that way from a legal perspective, you're not going to protect anything. A,
correct.
The only other option I can think of is maybe doing like what DOD and federal government contractors do, and they're forced to move to a government enclave where they remote in and they can't save anything locally. Everything is saved to their gov cloud, essentially, and it all lives inside their hosted environment. No data can be, you know, taken off. You know, that said, somebody could always come around with a cell phone and take a screenshot or whatever, you know, whatever. There's always something.
Well, I think we're running into this sooner than we think we are, because this is actually becoming an issue at the moment in the artistry community, where all these AI properties that are generating images of art pieces and basically online art pieces. This was a big thing that's going around right now in the internet, where let's say Bob Ross owned all his IP and that he never sold a single painting. He owned all of it. We have basically image models going through and analyzing every single art piece an artist is doing, whether they own the IP or they don't. And then if you input an image and say, hey, you know, make me an image that's similar style to X person, but like the output user that input that, you know, language model to generate that image technically owns the image. You know, it's basically copying IP, and we're starting to see that come up in the artist industry, where these online generated images are beginning to look very, very similar to owned IP, and it's devaluing pieces and is coming into legal battles, and we're actually seeing that pop up kind of sooner than I think a lot of people thought.
But Jordan, that's going to happen in all industries. That's exactly what I was talking about early on.
Yep.
Like, what's protected IP? If you're able to, it's not machine language or machine learning, it's AI. If you're able to tell it, hey, I need you to look at the five best designs for, I don't know, how to push air through a 3-inch tube that goes into an 8-inch pipe or something like that. And it comes up and I need you to streamline that process and make it efficient, better than it ever was done before. Who owns that now?
Yeah, I think we're running into the silly idea that IP is going to matter in 20 years. I mean, from a business standpoint, from an ownership creator standpoint, I think it certainly matters. Yeah. But I think it's almost going to be moot. So anecdotal story here. My wife has this Cricut. You know, she makes things. I've got a laser burner. They take an image file called an SVG. Well, Cricut has a proprietary thing where you pay for, you know, licensing, you know, images through its service, costs you like $10 a month or whatever it is. I'm cheap. I don't want to pay it. So I told my wife, don't buy it. I'll get you SVGs. Find an image you want. You can convert to an SVG for free. So even though somebody's created an image, you can create an SVG out of it and print it and use it yourself. So like IP exists, but there's always going to be a workaround. The open community is just the whether it's the people using Blender, Instructables or whatever, there's always somebody that's finding a hack to do something.
When it comes into commercial use laws, I mean, it's only, you know, an issue when it starts becoming, you know, profitable for another
organization. Foreign countries are making money off of U.S. IP all day long. I think the only change is now U.S. companies are going to make money off of U.S. IP.
I agree with that statement.
Yeah. Now, I do want to take a step back for a second, fellas, because there's a couple more questions. Well, a couple more things that I wanted to talk about. One, we got on a really good talk there a minute ago about translating data, right? And you know, Joe, Jordan, and of course Carlos, we talked about this last time when we were in AU. But depending on where that data is coming from, you know, it could be formatted so differently that it does not if you just try to bring it together, it's not going to understand what it needs, where it needs to go. There's a lot of time that's spent with data analytics. And why I wanted to bring this up, Carlos, is because, you know, you brought up a really, really good point during that talk track in the sense of you have to have the finish line in mind, right? You have to have the end goal in mind. What are you trying to get from this data? Right. And then you kind of map that back in terms of where is this coming from? Where can I match it? But that is a manual process, right? That's not just, it's not just mapping data from one piece to the other. It's understanding what you need in terms of data, why you need that data, and why you want to essentially compare it or translate it and connect it to another piece. Now, of course, we could be talking to something as simple as, you know, timesheet tracking from one, you know, application to another, and we're just mapping the field so it translates accordingly. But we could also be talking about something that is going to be, you know, used in a formula or used to, you know, translate that data so it actually reads in the analytics platform accordingly. And Carlos, you got your hand up, dude. I know you want to talk about this.
Man, you're right up my alley here with this one. So it's very important, like these situations, you need a cross-functional team, right? First of all, you need to understand what data other groups need, what's important to them from what you create, what's important to you from what they create. You need to be able to standardize that information at some point. You could use connectors, you could use APS, you could do a lot of different things, but you need to understand what is the information that different groups need. The other thing you need to understand is where in that data stream that it is going to be entered, right? Where does it make most logical sense, right? From beginning to end. Because like Jordan mentioned before, there's so much data. Once you start getting used to thinking big data, right? Like plants, $200 million projects, you know, all these large facilities, how do you start providing information for all the different groups? So you need to start breaking that down to the different division and departments and disciplines. This is what's going to be standardized. I don't care what group you are. You're responsible to providing this information because you come across it first. Engineering might have to approve. And guess what? Engineering, you're going to add 5 more bits of information to that because guess what? ERP is going to need it. You know?
Yeah. Well, yeah, dude. And then, you know, to go back to Joe's point earlier, you have to validate the data, right? Yep. As it's going through that stream, as it's going through that pipeline from one, you know, platform to another, to Joey's point and to Carlos and Jordan's point there, you get so much data. Yes, you need to know what's important to you, but also you need to understand that at some point, you know, like I've been trying to do data extractions from ACC and I bring them into Power BI and analyze my KPIs, whether they're on safety, for hour tracking, for asset tracking, many different things like that, right? But one of the things that I've realized in doing this is that some of the data that I get from my data extractions or even from the server, they don't make any sense. You know, there's some dates that don't, you know, line up with the filter that I put in. There's, you know, data points that essentially I need to go back and transform or remap because they just don't line up. It's an interesting kind of process to make sure. And even then, sometimes I find duplicates. You know, and this is another thing you're going to have to really figure out with data analysis and even with extractions, right? Like they kind of mentioned earlier, kind of figuring out, winding your way through all that data to figure out exactly what is valid, and then again transforming it and matching it to the other piece to make that data valuable.
Well, you got to have different, you got to review the data throughout the process and for different groups, right?
Yes.
I mean, there's some things that are traditional, you know, like it's just like creating a drawing. You create a drawing, somebody checks it. It's the same with data. You need to confirm it before it goes onto a bigger scale, and then you have doubts, right? You need to be able to say, nope, yep, that's accurate, you know? So that, like, all of those things, you know, people, part of my presentation this year, you know, I really surrounded it around data, because I think people are so caught up on connecting things. And I'm like, you can connect a lot of things. What are you connecting? You need to define what you're connecting, and you need to validate
why.
Yeah, you need to validate it way before you connect it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir. 100%. You got to have that path laid out. You got to have that understanding of what data you want to go where. And then you start actually, because you got to have the plan, guys, especially when you're trying to integrate data, when you're trying to analyze it. Joey and I talked about this on our last podcast, you know, integration versus automation.
Right.
And we talked about, you know, there's a benefit, but for integration and automation of connecting, you know, different data points together and making data go from one piece to the other. But in all reality, if you don't have anything, in my mind, a data lake or a data warehouse in the middle of all of those streams of data to aggregate that, to transform it, to push it over, you know, from the data lake into the actual data warehouse to be analyzed downstream, pushing it out to, you know, your analytics platform. I mean, there's a lot of different working pieces that go into this.
Yep. Dave, are we going to talk about where we're going to dump our data?
Oh, dude. Yeah, man.
Wait, Jordan, you're it.
I'm going to bury mine with Jimmy Hoffa. Screw you guys.
What were you saying, Jordan?
Oh, I was just going to jump in. I was going to piggyback off your point, and then Joe threw me for a loop for a second. I was just talking about, so I almost feel like data is becoming a buzzword similar to AI and BIM and all these other ones we talk about, because just like we were saying there, you know, there are so many use cases for integration or automation or, you know, analytical, you know, analyzing your data as you're going through. It's like you have to understand what data that you're trying to put in and what data you're trying to get out. Just like Carlos was saying kind of in the beginning there, you know, there's all these different ways to collect data. But then what do you do when you collect the data? What are you trying to get out of that information? You probably have way too much data if you're just going out and skimming everything for everything. And then you have to start kind of aligning these funnels within your data to output information you want to use as, you know, KPIs, or if you're automating a process, or you're integrating to your different systems to, you know, determine profitability or use cases, or, you know, as we start getting in and, you know, we can talk about different data silos and data connections and, you know, how to get points. And, you know, we're going to talk about storage data here for a second, but getting into actual use cases is kind of your beginning point whenever you start getting into these AI models on, you know, where are we going? What are we trying to analyze? And how do we collect that data? Once you have those figured out, it'll be very easy to kind of reverse engineer that. I say easy, you know, very vaguely, but it's you're able to start reverse engineering the processes you're actually trying to analyze and figuring out ways to collect that data internally. Use cases, though, that I think in our industry we're going to see happen pretty quickly is I'm looking forward to, like, the add-ins and the analytical information where we can begin, you know, taking different coding systems. Dave, you and I talked about this before, where, you know, our international standards or our local codes or our energy models, and being able to start integrating those kind of set standards that we are required to follow into our modeling processes and being able to analyze the information. And I do think that's going to be one of the big pushes to making the information inside the model extremely good, because the better the model is, the better that output and analytical information is going to be against the standards. And it's going to help us really push BIM into kind of the next stage or the next generation, I'm hoping.
Yes, sir. Well, that goes back to Carlos's point. You have to standardize, right? Even with those apps, even with something like regulating code and things of that nature, you are setting a standard. at that point to meet, to make sure that you meet that standard. And you're completely right, Jordan. I mean, if we can stand, I mean, shoot, we've been looking for BIM standards for years here in the US, but if we can eventually get some BIM standards, man, I really think, I agree.
Well,
dude.
Even countries that have the BIM standards, it seems like they're always changing and changing almost too rapidly or
that's
per
true.
Project. Like we had the fellows from Ideal BIM on talking about the changes that they're going through on their mega projects overseas. I did have a short thing to mention real quick, Jordan, to your point, where you mentioned, data validity as well as like standardization. I think we're in data being a buzzword, which it is. And all these times you guys are saying buzzwords, I'm like now trying to process in my head, like, oh, this is now a buzzword. I have to take
a buzzword,
a shot.
Have a drink. Yeah, yeah.
Data is not a buzzword.
It's not, but I think it's being
used. It can't
used.
Be a buzzword.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's too important to be a buzzword. But I think what it's becoming is more of a
it's a cloud. It's more of a blanket term.
It's becoming a blanket term. And used almost as incorrectly as digital
as
twin.
BIM and sorry, digital sorry. Twin. Yeah. No, you're
yeah,
right.
But to Jordan's point though, many years ago I set up KPIs for a department, and it's been a while since I've even thought about KPIs in a real manner, like as far as like setting them up, but like going through the process, like took me back to like thinking about Six Sigma, and there's like this whole process: design, measure, analyze, improve, control. And like when you're going through the process, you're thinking about what's important, and then setting a standard so that you can measure the repeatable. So like think about right. it in terms of like a survey, right? You want to send out a survey to somebody, you give them standard answers, A, B, C, or D to fill in, those answers. But for the data that we're getting these days, they're almost all unstructured data. It's a text yeah. query. It's
well,
an image or whatever.
Yes. You need to make it repeatable.
Oh, 100%. And I think that's where 100%. We're getting to the point now. Yeah. I think that's where we're getting to a point now. It's like, all right, well, how do we define what that standard is?
Right.
You almost got to go through it and learn, fail a couple times, and then tweak as you go on, and then your data gets better.
So let me give you my experience right now. We're talking about a place that's never really gathered data through solutions like what we have today, right? And one of the biggest things, I go, okay, give me some historical data, budget. Let's talk about budget. You want me to give you ROIs on how long it's taken us to use this process now using these solutions, right? I'm like, okay, give me a budget. And how long did it take you to do it before? And give me a budget, right? And I'm like, well, we don't really have that. Well, then I can't give you anything until I run it 2, 3, 4 months or projects or a year so I can show you what it is. What's our baseline? Like, you need to develop baselines for any kind of data. You need to have some kind of understanding what that data is, what it represents in today's world for you at that moment for what you're trying to get. I find it interesting when, like, you really torqued me here with a KPI, because I get asked that all the time. I work for Bridgestone. Everything is about KPIs. And I'm like, how do you measure KPIs if with all these fluctuating things, what's repeatable here? So with these solutions today, we can make things repeatable. We can start breaking them. We can really start getting into the nitty-gritty. It's rather interesting, this data thing. That's why it's interesting where it's gone.
It'll be interesting to see how much it morphs too. Like you were talking earlier about the large data aspect. We're talking about repeatable data to get a baseline and figure out where you can improve from it, and scale that ROI, right? We want to figure out where we can actually improve and actually reduce costs and time and increase efficiency to make our processes better while reducing waste. And in order to get to that part, right, we're looking at structured data, but as we're starting to scale out and look at AI, large language learning modules, predictive analytics, unstructured data per se, we're getting to a whole new world. It's going to be interesting to see where this kind of bleeds into our industry. I'm convinced that somebody's already figured out and they're using it in, you know, politics or finance or one of these other more profitable segments. Like, it's getting used somewhere. But as it starts to trickle out, right, you know, into the commercial space, manufacturing and construction, which are almost becoming synonymous with each other at this state of the game, you know, what are we going to do with that data? How are we going to analyze it? What is it going to mean for us? And that I think that course is yet to be written. And whoever figures that out, I mean, we're interviewing people nonstop to talk about AI and construction, AI and BIM, and we've had a lot of great conversations, but like trying to figure out, you know, who's got a good grasp on the future and how it becomes more profitable and how to actually push the conversation forward without looking at the finite structured data as we're talking about. I think that's going to be the more holistic thing. Like, social media has already figured it out, right? They've been looking at large data for you know, two decades now.
Yeah.
We haven't done that.
I think so. Listen, look at what we're doing. There's a lot of bad habits, a lot of archaic industries. Some are better than others. Technology is definitely way ahead of what we do, whether it's AEC or manufacturing or the water industry. Look at the water industry, for God's sake. I think what's going to happen as these things come out is who can adjust and understand these solutions in different industries and how to apply them to theirs. Because I've been very successful in different industries. Guess what? All I do is really apply BIM. You know, I understand what BIM is. Now, today, things are evolving. It's not just BIM. It's like, what can you do with all this data now, right? Because there's a lot more potential for it. But I think it's going to be more of that type of evolution, right? I think all these industries are afraid as well. You know, like, who's going to make that jump? Everybody talks about the jump. Yeah, we want to do this. We want to do that. I love hearing that. Yeah, we want to do digital transformation or digital twins. And I laugh. It makes me laugh. You know, it really does, because there's so much planning. There's so much thinking that needs to go into
this. Yeah,
it's
just not a flip of the switch. Right?
Yeah,
you can't just say,
it's undefined, too. Like, when we hear we're going to use digital twin on a project, it's like, what the fuck are you saying? Like, yeah, what are you saying?
What does that
Please
mean?
Define this for me.
What does that mean? I'm like,
and take a shot.
True.
Carlos, I'm sure you know this, but that is like the phrase, the term digital twin is like nails on a chalkboard for me at this stage. It's like, oh, I know
bridging
you
the
want
gap
something
a couple years ago.
And you're talking about scanning. Dave did a presentation. He named it Bridging the Gap. And I feel like he did that just to like get at me. But digital twin, like, it's just it's turned into like, and I've got a lot of friends in the scan space that are doing amazing things. And they always say digital twin. And I know they know what they're talking about. And it's become more of a marketing word. And I'm not knocking them in any respect. But when I hear somebody mandate digital twin on a project, like I was talking to these people at this airport job. And they're like, yeah, we've been mandated to digital twin. I'm like, okay, well, what does that mean for your project? What are the, you know, what does this actually include? And they're like, well, we don't know. We just have to use some form of digital twin. I'm like, all right, are we talking about like a little handheld Vidoc scanner where you're just scanning like one thing? Do you need a full model? Like, is there information in this model? Is it a point
use
cloud?
Your iPhone.
What data is valuable?
What is
to
this?
You?
Exactly.
I saw a presentation once, airport. This big company, they're like, yeah, we use laser scanning for it. And I'm like thinking about it. I'm like, what kind of registration? How did you align all these scans? What did you survey first? Did you align your scans to the survey? Did you do this? Did you drone scan? Hey,
what kind of scanner are we talking about? Are we IMU handheld? Or are we talking terrestrial position based? Like, so, there's so much.
Great presentation, right? So I pull the person on the side later. Well, what did you do with this? How did you align it? How, like, this is great. Well, we didn't quite figure it out yet. Can you imagine what a hot mess that was?
Oh my gosh. I man.
Like a billion dollar project. I'm like, whoa, that's big, you know?
Well, yeah, and I don't know, man. I mean, it's hard because when you get people that, you know, I don't know, man. I've had people that have been scanning for a while and I'll get a point cloud and you're like, man, what is this? Where is the the overlap. And, oh, well, I did this portion, and then I jumped over here to do this portion, and then I brought it back in the middle. I'm like, well, that doesn't help me at all. And then when you scan a whole another portion of a building that's not at all connected to the other parts, how am I going to process this? I mean, it's insane to think about how, I mean, like we were talking about earlier, there's so much data in a point cloud. You think about trying to register each individual scan. And when you're on a big site, when you're on a big project, there are hundreds of scans. And trying to remember, like, if you guys don't have a good plan and a good map of where you walked in that building, you're not going to remember that, you know, 3-4 days later as you're like, oh, crap. You know, if you didn't have good targets, good things set up, like if there's a lot of data, guys, I mean, that's one of the interesting things, like we were talking about earlier. You got to know what you want from it. You got to have a good
scan
plan.
Scan in order, dude. Scan well, in fucking order. Sorry.
It's not even just that, brother. I mean, you're right, but you got to have a good plan. You got to go into that knowing what you want, knowing why you want it, and then planning to on how you're going to get it. Because if you just go in there and think that you're going to get a good level of data and you just scan everything, I mean, yeah, you might get a big ass scan project, but really, did you get what was your main, you know, goal there? Were you trying to map out the pipes? Are you mapping out equipment? Like there's got to be certain things that you're looking for within that, you know, scan or within that data, because at the end of the day, I mean, you're trying to process that and push it out. It's data that's going from one point to another, right? And if you don't really figure out what and why, it's a big hunk of garbage that you're going to get, and you're going to try to sift through all of that data to figure out why and where. And at that point, you're going to spend more time investing in trying to sort that out than it's worth, right? You're going to find an endpoint at a certain point and be like, I'm just going to have to wash my hands with it because I can't put any more time into it.
Yeah. So on that, I want to mention two things. Not purposefully plugging them, but they have a great tool, Verity, for the verification side. If you want to check your scan against your model, as long as it's been modeled, right, you can actually figure out, you know, what's BS pretty quickly if it's actually been put in place. I think that helps us with some of that, as long as you have a model. The other side of that, right, you know, the other side of that, though, is I don't know if you've seen this yet, but again, talking about ClearEdge, they had a new plugin just come out, and it's free. It's in Revit, allows you to view your point clouds and align them inside of your Revit model, manipulate them with all the similar recap functionality, but right in Revit against your model. And I know that's kind of taking a tangent here, but you, when we started talking about the scanning thing, I'm like, oh my God, this freaking plugin, I just played with it today. It's awesome.
Yeah.
Man. So anyways,
oh dude, I like it. Well, I mean, so what that's cool. I'm kind of, it is really cool. What I like about that tool is
I'll give you a free license, Carlos, man, of the new plugin for it.
Listen, I'm in.
It almost like condenses the size of the point cloud. So it actually makes it easier to navigate inside of Revit when you have a point cloud loaded in. It's actually pretty awesome. Like I've been in Revit with even some smaller sized point clouds, and it's nuts when it tries to render and you're trying to navigate around it, cut sections and rotate and pan around, and you got to wait for that thing to reload up. It's funny, but guys, I mean, this is almost kind of down the same, you know, kind of, I would say somewhat down the same talk track we're having, right, is figuring out what data is important to you. And even like with the ClearEdge plugin, they're condensing, they're taking a certain amount of data and they're condensing it for a reason and bringing it into, you know, the Revit project to help with navigation, but also for visualization. Well, now,
it's also workflow, right?
It is. Yes, sir. It is.
It's about workflow.
Well, when we talk about digital twin, I'm thinking of more of a post construction process, more of an as-built, right? Where we're handing over a model. Or you know, a 3D representation. Yes, we might already have a model, but we actually want to know what's accurate and actually as built. And that's what I was thinking about the ClearEdge piece. Sorry if my brain was connecting dots that my mouth did not. Was that like when we get to that point of a digital twin, is actually now we can actually verify and update our 3D model So now our 3D model, our actual BIM, you know, Revit, whatever have you software you're using that has the information in it, can now be updated to align with the actual as-built data from the scan. So therefore, we have a true digital twin that we can hand over for FM or, you know, asset management, what have you, so that
the
life cycle of that building or facility lives on.
Let me add some additional clarity to that, right? What if you don't have any models, right? And maybe you're taking scans into something like maybe Tandem and you're adding information to it, right?
Because have you played with Tandem?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man, I love – dude. So, all right, man, it's geek out time. Do you remember the old platform that Autodesk had? Back when they had Field and Glue?
Yeah,
it was
called
what was the Ops, BIM 360 Ops.
Yeah,
Tandem is almost like that, but like on steroids. And it works with your ACC data pretty seamlessly. It's pretty cool, man. I'm a big fan.
No, it's cool. So, but you got to put those into perspective, right? Like that's a great tool. Like I see Tandem, and I really see that for companies just that want to get into the digital side of business, and they want to document what they have or provide a service, something or from nothing to something. You know, it's not really for. Well, I shouldn't say that.
I get where you're going with that. Yeah. It doesn't seem like it's really made for facilities management, at least not yet. Like
they acquired a digital twin.
You can gather info. You can create a digital twin and gather info.
But it's not really managing it.
No, it's meant to feed into your FM system. So when they acquired their own development company, it's got its own Work Auto type platform that connects to other facilities management solutions. It'll feed your data from Tandem to a real FM system.
Yeah.
It was a good acquisition by Autodesk. Those guys are crazy good.
And listen, you know, from some little birdie told me, you know, they're going to make this data backward compatible, right? So it's going to be bi-directional. So that's going to change the game for that too, right?
It is 100%.
Now, yeah, well, that was the good workflow from like Field and Glue is – so Field was a document manipulation platform. Glue was model it was focused on the model subject,
correct
from your Revit data or Navisworks, mostly or Revit, Navisworks, right? Yeah. So what we would do though is we would push to Field. So like if we did a commissioning workflow, we could have that update our Glue model and update our Revit families and kind of do that backwards push. So if we can get there from Tandem, that'd be huge.
That's going to happen.
Oh, yeah. Man, I'm excited.
Yeah, that's going to happen. So Autodesk is focusing on some tools that, you know, we're talking about all these connectors, right? APS and stuff. Well, they're specifically on focusing on making sure that they can share data between different applications.
Yeah, Dave and I, we meet with various integrators and Autodesk regularly to talk about this sort of stuff. There's a lot of cool companies that are popping up in the Autodesk ecosystem that are funded by them, plus what Autodesk is doing internally. There's just a lot of cool data connectivity going on. And what Autodesk built and all the other companies like them is the pitch was, hey, get off of these data silos and, you know, get into a unified platform. But really, we were getting to a point where we were developing a larger data silo and they couldn't make integrations for everybody. But there are so many companies out that make great integrations. We're just getting to this amazing point now where data can talk anywhere.
True.
Yeah. Yeah, it can. And I mean, honestly, the fact that they opened up the APIs made them completely free even to use. I mean, not like the Revit ones, obviously the Revit Civil 3D, some data extraction tools. I believe those do cost tokens. But as far as like the ACC APIs, you know, they're completely free. They're open. So I do love the fact that they have done that. You're right, Joe. They were. I think they did recognize that they were building another silo. And I do also love that all of these pieces kind of talk to each other. We're seeing more APIs open and you know, kind of communicating back and forth. But it's also it's quite interesting, man. I see it's funny, but there are silos popping up all over the place. I mean, you know, I went down this this little trail, right, I guess, or this journey to figure out, you know, AWS or Azure. Right. And you start, because I mean, I was looking for a secured environment where I can learn more machine learning algorithms, learn, you know, data blob storage and query and really just diving into more of it and seeing what's out there. But the more that you start to kind of look around, you realize that everybody's got their own silo and they yep. want you to keep that in their silo. Right. I mean, they'll talk to each other and they'll send data out. But a lot of times you explore these APIs and a lot of them are pretty limiting, in all honesty. They'll have APIs, but it's like to, you know, get data or certain, there are certain functionalities that they will allow, but not really a lot of, you know, a lot of others. But, right. you know, I like I said, I went down this path and I start looking at AWS and, you know, AWS has their blob storage, they have their query tools, they have their AI, they have their machine learning algorithms. And it's the same thing with Azure. I mean, they're using OpenAI, they're not using Lex, right? And they have a few different approaches for that. But one thing that I've noticed, though, I will tell you, looking across these platforms, is that everybody, Microsoft, AWS, Google, any one of them that you look at, they all are starting to adopt automation. Like you look in Microsoft, it was what is that? Power App.
Power Automate. Yeah, that's
Power Automate. Yeah. Well, I'm just saying, like Power Automate. Like I'm seeing these trends. Amazon AWS has I can't remember what the hell it's called now, but essentially you're starting to see that each one of these platforms, even, I mean, they're siloed, but they're starting to build these other surrounding pieces, right? To really envelop. I mean, like AWS guys, you look at that. I mean, they have all of the different pieces to store, to analyze. They make their own AI. I mean, there's a lot of different pieces there, and they want you know, they want other pieces to come in, but they essentially want you to stay there. They want you to keep their data there.
They've done a good job at buying out that ecosystem too, and building up a lot of third-party tools and acquiring tools and licensing IP from other people. Going back to that IP phrase, but like they're doing, in my mind, what's probably the most needed from a business side, a commercial side, right? As far as owning the AI modules, the various, you know, niches.
Oh, 100%, you know, brother.
Yeah, because not,
I mean, one, they're AI providing their clients all the tools to be able to do these things.
Well, Microsoft still uses ChatGPT to some extent. I think is going to end up with the you know what, before I voice my bias here, Carlos, where do you think all these AI companies are going to end up? So we've got Bard, which is now Gemini, which is Google. We've got you know, ChatGPT, OpenAI. We've got Microsoft.
Thanks to Al for the call out on the last episode, by the way. Nice. I will. I love that, dude. I always love feedback and when people will, you know, react with us. And you know, he just brought up a good point of, you know, what about a lot of the other AI engines out there?
Well, there's a lot of AI engines out there. So there's AWS. You know, there's so many AI engines. Where do you see the one that's going to be probably the most prolific in our niche, right? You know, because construction accounts for, whether directly or indirectly, like, you know, 25%, I think, is one of the numbers I heard of the U.S. labor force. But, you know, for the people that actually, you know, that's parts and pieces, right? For the people that are actually involved in construction, it's probably much smaller. Where do you see, which AI, rather, do you see as being the most prolific in our segment, and where do you think the rest stand as far as like a whole, like where are their places? I'm just curious from I need some validation on my own theories.
Yeah, so I think Copilot for Microsoft is going to be a bigger play. They're investing a lot of money. I think, like, for example, my company's looking into that, right? to make sure for security reasons what they can protect. I don't know how, you know, like ChatGPT, you know, they have this thing going on where they're clearly, to me, they're the innovators, right? They've kind of, they're pushing the envelope and open the door for a lot of companies. I'm not sure where that's going to go. I'm not sure. We know Microsoft is heavily invested in AI, right? Funny story for me is my company is heavily invested in Microsoft, like Azure and AWS. I moved my vaults to AWS, but we have Azure, right?
Yep.
So we're running into the same issue right here, like the compatibility thing, right? And and from a design, engineering, construction perspective,
ease of use.
Yeah, Microsoft loses a little bit, and PMO
it does.
And PMO's a little bit upset about that, right?
Yep.
And so I'm like, listen, like anything else, you're gonna have to present it to upper management. They could tell you no, or they could tell me no. That's all we have, you know. So, and those lines are gray. Those areas are gray. Nobody knows.
Yep. Now, for those of you who will,
and you know, I don't want to get away from Joe's question here. You know, the AIs are rather interesting. I know that my company's heavily looking into them. I think Copilot is something that they're heavily looking into. You know, AWS services provides all the tools that Azure provides.
They do. Now, one piece I have off of that too is, you know, for any of you guys looking down the rabbit hole of AWS or Azure, just kind of going off of Carlos's point there, just as I've been able to kind of navigate between the two, that is one thing that I've actually noticed about AWS is it is very user friendly. Not only is it user friendly, it's actually easy to interact between the different environments or to set up. I want to call it integrations, but I mean they're essentially just the movement of data between the different AWS platforms, like Lex or Sage or I had a whole bunch of them in there. I was just in there the other day, but essentially, I mean, one thing that I've noticed is with Microsoft, you actually have to code. Like you got to code, and I think it's Python or it might be JavaScript. I'll have to check. But it's like it is code based, you know, in that environment to be able to make those connections between those different points, even inside of just the Microsoft environment. With AWS, it's like a click of a button, dude. I can just say, yeah, I want the data to go from here to here, and I can turn this on. And I noticed, you know, instantly that I kind of gravitated more towards that AWS environment just because of that. You know what I mean?
I want to play devil's advocate. So while AWS might have ease of use, what Microsoft has done very well is integrate with its applications. It has some of the most used applications, at least in the business space, to date.
In the business space.
In the business space, right? Like, correct. So yep. I think that's two fields of thought to think about, right? The consumer space and the business space. So ChatGPT is great in the consumer space. Copilot and all that stuff, which might be, you know, built on OpenAI, is really taking off in the business space. I haven't used it personally. I like my AI, you know, like where I want to go to it, not necessarily be integrated just yet. I'm not there. I'm crawling. But that said,
dude, you're living in the dark.
I know, but that kind of goes back to the, the scanning conversation earlier, like. Scanning has been very prevalent for many, many years, but it didn't take off. Like it didn't get the light that it got until, you know, Apple released the Pro Max or whatever, where you had LiDAR on your phone and then you put it in the consumer's hands and consumers can actually realize the power with it. So I think we're getting to a point now where like consumers realize the power of, you know, AI and businesses are starting to realize the power of AI. And while Microsoft might do very well with the applications, you know, Dave, you might be right where AWS is probably easier to use from business case and might get the further longevity out and all that stuff. But I think to date, the one that like is probably, you know, going to catch up the quickest as far as use is again, this is just my biases here, is I think Microsoft might force their way into it, just like I think Google might force their way into it. As soon as Google starts forcing AI into their apps, Maps is probably one of the most used apps that's ever been used. Like, if they put AI
Google, they've already put AI in their phones at this point. I went to the Verizon store the other day. Yeah, dude.
Yeah.
They put AI right into the phone.
Dude, yeah. you can talk in real time in a language and have it translate to another language.
Right? That's kind of nuts.
Real time, dude. That's crazy.
Nuts. Sorry. Man. No, dude. I'm geeking out. I'm right there with you because I saw that commercial and I was like, dude, I kind of want one. Like, I'm not going to like Japan or anything anytime soon, but I want a phone that's going to translate for me for some reason.
Who knows, man? We do have a Japan parent company.
I'm gonna be BWB, walking around the airport with my earbuds in, just trying to freaking listen to what everybody's saying.
Oh my god, that's funny. True. I would do that.
Yeah.
Well, if you go to Samsung, you're not using earbuds, buddy.
Yeah, that's true. But hey, so to bring it all back together though, Joe, I think your point there is, as we see AI grow, I mean, it's growing in the consumer space, it's growing in the business space. But you know, we got to go Pink Floyd with this, right? Carlos, I wanted to bring this back because you mentioned it earlier, man. There's a dark side of AI, right? And so let's talk about that for a minute. What would you say is the dark side of AI?
Oof, it's unmanaged right now. It's unmanaged.
Yes, I would completely. People don't know. It's unmanaged. It's unregulated.
Yeah, people don't know the parameters. People don't really fully understand all of this. People, this is like a dark hole. You know, there's a couple things there in history. There's a couple things that are big, right? That create that blip. Like, for example, the iPhone was a blip, right? The internet was a blip. I think right now, you know, we're dealing with two blips potentially. You know, we're talking about AI and this, like, what do you call it? Like advanced computing, like
quantum computing.
Correct.
Quantum computing. Yeah.
Like these two things right now will completely disrupt industry.
Yeah. So once we get to a level of quantum computing and we can solve an insane amount of, like, I don't even know how to describe it. Like,
it can essentially, it can wade through a bunch of data at one time.
You can look at the human DNA and map the genome in a fraction of the time that we've ever been able to do it, even with the most powerful stuff today. Quantum computing is kind of the next mega leap. And once we get to that point, that's actually at the precipice of when we can actually begin to understanding all of the data. Because while we have AI and these large language modules analyzing, you know, historical data, and it's taking a long time for it to get to that point, and we develop these modules based on that. And again, it's got a fraction of all the data that's out there. It's not, you know, all of the consumed knowledge. Once we get to a point where we're actually able to use quantum computing, we're going to get to a point where this gets to be processed in real time more faster, and not just looking at historical data for context, but actually like data assets being put out right now. So if data gets put out in the next like 10 seconds, and by the time I'm done typing this question text and 10 seconds has passed, it's able to analyze that. Like, we're going to get to a point where this is so evolutionary, like having a chip inside of your brain. While it's scary as hell to think about, and probably the precipice for
they're already doing it.
Yeah,
sign me up, man.
Sci-fi. Yeah, yeah,
neurological. Yeah, sign me up, man.
Yeah, you're gonna get to a point where like you're able to see patterns and things that you never thought were possible. Whatever company does this first, I guarantee you the first thing they're gonna do is analyze the stock market. 100%
doing it.
He's doing Neuralink. He did.
Usually it's Dave and I, but I think that's not affiliated to the AEC industry or the manufacturing industry.
Not yet, but maybe one day. I mean, think about this. Like, so the reason why we don't have robotics on construction is very chaos industry, and we come up with a lot of great ideas. Like, we have automated bricklaying machines. We have concrete.
But why, Joe?
because we have huge labor shortages and people don't want to acknowledge this, or they do want to acknowledge it, but in very quiet sectors. But there is an insane labor shortage because historically people have thought about construction, and I myself, I'm to blame too.
They want to beat their bodies to shit.
We don't want to swing hammers. We don't want to dig ditches, and we don't think about that. But you know what? Nobody told me I could make $100,000 a year digging a ditch. Nobody told me this was an option. It's not even about that.
It's not even about that anymore, brother. It's not. It's okay. A lot of even me, dude. You talk to me. I could make $100,000 digging a ditch, or I could make $80,000 working on technology and doing some cool shit. I'm going to do some cool shit instead of digging a ditch, man. Like, you know, at the end of the day, yes, people want to make money, but they also want to love what they do. And in construction, in my mind, you have to adopt the technology. That's how we're going to get the younger generations in, is to adopt the tech, the shiny shit.
The tech is cool, but like, once you give somebody that little bit of pride to see you contributed on that project, or that BIM model that you were involved with, or that coordination effort that you're involved with.
There's an ownership in the project
or whatever. Yeah, yeah. Like you're like, I crave that. Like that is like, it's the something I miss about consulting or being in, like I still rant and rave about the projects I was involved with, 20 years ago, just freaking pounding a hub in the ground for a survey point or construction layout or whatever. You're like, I helped build that, there's some pride in that.
No,
regardless of what, it's a huge thing.
I agree with you. You know, one of my first experiences, in the energy industry, I introduced a fully intelligent model, right? And it went really from all we did was intelligent piping. And then that went, I gave a presentation, how we add data, how we create a bill of material. From that presentation to the following week, all disciplines are 3D, right? And then in my next presentation, I go, next year I'm going to work on mobile apps, and I happen to show the one model we had, and the engineer goes, hey, that's the project we just did. Yeah, I want that. How come we don't have that? We don't have a workflow for that yet, and that you brought up before, this BIM Teams and the BIM Glue stuff. And, shortly after that, construction was, they're like, we want models too. Okay, you can have them. You never asked for them. Right. Yep. And then they were like, they were worried about, listen, field guys are never going to want to see a model. Well, guess what? They sent me a picture of a 70-year-old guy doing inspections on an iPad.
Mm-hmm. It's normal now. So yep. Like the old curmudgeonly rebuttal that we used to hear is like, oh, I've got to train my, to use your statement, 70-year-old guy, he hates technology, whatever, but he uses a smartphone every day. Right. Every day he uses a smartphone. Like, he's fine with it. Yeah, he might be a little clunkier than Gen Z or millennial or whoever, but that's what he uses, right? Because there's not too many other companies that make other options. He uses that, right?
Right.
Yeah. Okay, well, we have an app for that. Like, there's an app he downloads, goes
and
through.
It is, like, everybody's not meant to sit in an office, and it does attract, like, younger generation do understand technology better than older technology, and there's a lot of gain there, right? You need to include technology. I mean, technology is in construction now. It's going to grow,
It is.
You don't have enough people. You don't have enough knowledge. You need to capture that knowledge. Technology is a great way to capture some of that. Now with AI, and there's a lot of things in play, and having younger people that can use these tools, and it's changing. It's changing, and it has to, right?
Mm-hmm. And I also think it's challenging, and that's the interesting thing we're seeing about construction today. You see it everywhere. Oh well, there's delays in construction. They want a faster schedule. They want a better budget or lower budget, and they want it delivered, twice as fast. They want it built twice as fast. And what at the end of the day, if you want to keep up in the industry, the real question is, how are you going to do it? It's not It's not, you know, what other projects are there? It's how are you going to do this? How are you going to keep up? And how are you going to excel in this environment, right? And one of the biggest things I've seen is no matter what, people that adopt technology, they start adopting it. They look at, now, I mean, I'm not going to specify exactly what kind of technology, but when you start adopting technology and making it, you know, work into what you do, making it, you know, giving it a piece of your workflow, giving it a job, essentially, I mean, you are putting a person or two or three people with that piece of equipment, right? And one of the big things, like you guys were saying, the younger generations, if we can start adopting the technology, show them that this stuff is cool. I mean, you know what? If somebody would have brought up a robotic total station to me as a kid, I would have thought that was cool as shit. You know, now it's still pretty cool. It has a use, you know, so it's like it's not as cool maybe as the scanner in my mind. But at the same time, you know, a robotic total station is cool as shit and it can guide this HP site print. It can, you know, it can save us a lot of time and there's a lot of benefit to that. Right. But I really think that's what, I mean, I don't know, man. I think that's what we got to do is to really, you know, when you think about the challenge that we are approached with today is to deliver more with less. And the only way to do that is to really adopt technology. But at
there's
the same
too much
time,
out there, though, how, what, well, how do companies right. vet what tech? There's so many.
So
you're
completely right.
So
it's oversaturated.
Oh,
right?
My God.
It's oversaturated.
There's
it's
so many people
saying,
I'm good enough for this, I can do this, I can do this, I can do that.
Yeah, dude.
Yep.
But we've gotten to a point where it's like, who's really telling the truth?
You're right. You're completely right. And guess what? Every company out there is going to try and sell their stuff to you, to sell you and tell you that, you know, they're the best and they're going to save you money. But at the end of the day, it goes back to where we started in this conversation. Right. You're going to get inundated with so much data. Right. You're not going to know what to really do with it. And that's the same thing as you know, same kind of conversation along the same lines here. You got to have a plan with what software you're going to use, why it's important to you. What does it do that's important for your company and how does it affect your workflows and the end goal? Because that's what we have to map out first. We have to map out the end goal, and then we have to start figuring out what pieces of technology can help us get there, what pieces of technology talk, you know, like it's just, there's so much that can go into that, man. But I mean, you're right, Joe. There's so many different pieces out there. You have to do your research because, like I said, everybody and their mother are going to try to sell you technology and they're going to tell you it saves you money. It's ROI, you know, all this stuff. And they're right. It can save you money. It can be a return on investment. But at the same time, if that's not one of your key points of you're not really struggling in that environment, you're not in struggling in, you know, RFIs or whatever it is, then why move? Figure out what your real pain points are. Figure out what is important, what that end goal is again, and then kind of map it out back from there. Figure out what softwares are strong here or strong there, what technology is good here, good there, and right. supplement that into your business. But until you have that goal, you're completely right, dude. You can invest until the cows come home and you could lose all of that money because you really don't know what's important to you and to your business or why you're succeeding in the first place, right? If you can't, I love the fact, you know, the term master of, or what is it, a master of all trades or jack of all trades, master of none. You know what I mean? It's a great term.
That's literally the word I live by is jack of all trades, master of none. That's it like in my business title.
No, dude, you're good. I love it, right? Like, I do love it. But at the same time, that's not how you want your business to be. Like, you and me, you know,
No, the money
sense.
Is made in the niche. Your market
hey, wait
is
exactly.
made in the niche.
I'm a
whatever
jack of
you
all trades.
Sell at.
No, dude, but that's great because you bring that experience, right? But at the same time, you're not, I would say, you're not running an MEP company trying to do everything that you're doing, right? Because if you did that, it probably wouldn't be very beneficial.
No, I'd fail miserably, man. I spent all my time in the fab shop because that's the side of things
right?
I love. I love yeah. the I love the welding and manufacturing and putting parts and pieces together more than I like the big picture sort of stuff. But that said, I do have a plug. I got to say, Darren Young actually taught a class at the MEP conference in Orlando, I believe, on this very topic where he's talking about the inundation of resellers and partners and vendors, you know, pushing and peddling various technologies that may or may not fit your niche. And they're just kind of like just throwing whatever at you to see if it sticks, but not actually figuring out if it actually makes sense. And it's like really geared at, well, two parts. One, as a salesperson to kind of, you know, make sure that they're doing their due diligence, but also more importantly, as somebody who's in the industry to kind of vet and be able to see through kind of the bullshit and ask the right questions. And I think that's where we're at in our cycle, is to know what questions do we need to ask.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You need to understand what you're trying to achieve as a company. You need to better educate yourself. You know, I refer to a lot of what I do as to educating my peers and my upper management. Because anybody can walk in there and say, oh yeah, and it happened to me. You know, somebody says, yeah, you should be doing digital twins. We can help you. And I got pulled into this meeting. I'm like, really? Tell me how you're going to help us, the company. And they start talking about it. Oh, okay. And they're talking about this and we can help you do that. Well, let me show you what we do. And at the end of it, the guy goes, you guys are almost doing it. I know. But they catch somebody's ear and they're like ready to, they don't even know what they're ready to do, but they're ready to do without understanding like all the cost that it's going to bring.
Exactly, dude. It's, I mean, I love this industry, but it's one of the most frustrating things that I see is people will purchase technology. They will purchase hardware. They'll purchase software and they have no plan for it. And or they say this software is going to fix all of our problems and they invest in it, but then they do not follow up with actually learning the software, learning the workflows, like actually getting into it and investing that time into it. Yeah. And what I find most times is when, I mean, obviously if they don't, they end up falling back to what they were doing, and it's frustrating because it's like, well, if you guys are going to invest, actually invest in software, hardware, whatever it is, actually like invest in it, make it work for your company, figure out what it does, like what it can do and how it can supplement with what you guys, you know, do. And then roadmap it further. Always look at the other features. Look at how you continue growing in that platform. Because if you use it for one or two pieces, oh, that's great. That's great. But I mean, at the same time, you're leaving so much on the table that you could be doing.
That's on point. But you also have to invest in your people.
100%. You got to invest in your people. You got to invest in your team, dude. Yeah. I mean, if you're not willing to build your team, to invest in your team, to get them trained or to, you know, to allow them time to learn it and actually sit down and train them in the standards that you guys have or you're wanting to achieve, help get the plan together. And I mean, if you don't have that plan, cool, help, you know, map it out, but at least have the ideas of where you want to go and the goals that you want to reach. I mean, I don't know, man. I think the best way to do it is really to plan it out and then go, because if you try to jump in and just try to figure it out through YouTube videos, you just make the purchase, it can fall. I think so. It can fall apart right in your face, man. And all that money that you guys spent on that piece of equipment, it sits on shelf, or that software that you're going to return, or you purchased it, but then you don't use it. It's nuts.
Well, we get into a point now where we see technology adoption as a few different avenues. By the way, our listeners can't see our very lively comments thread here, but it is hilarious. Anyways.
It is.
I guess what it boils down to is like companies kind of come to a few different, you know, points, right? Where they'll come up to point and say, oh, we need to do this because they missed out on a project and they saw the real benefit. Maybe it was a longstanding customer, went with a different way. They implemented very poorly, or they didn't implement at all, and now they're trying to play catch up. The other side is, you know, if they're leading edge and they're trying to lean into it and try to figure out use cases, and usually they've got an R&D department or somebody that's trying to help them figure something out. More leading edge and bleeding edge, I guess, really to that aspect. The other side, though, is those that are just trying to tag along and say, yeah, we do that. Or, they'll just buy it because it's a project mandate, but not put a lot of thought into it. But really what we end up with is, as you guys were saying, is a bunch of YouTube learners, which is great. Cause I mean, YouTube was there for me in the early days. It's kind of how I picked up stuff. I didn't know anything, not that I know anything now, but like it got me through where I needed to go to at least complete a project and get to a point where it was at least satisfactory. But I feel like we've gotten to a point now where we're starting to see the benefit is actually there. It's worth it if we can actually just invest the time and money early on. That actually saves us more time and money over the length of it. And now as we get to the precipice of new technology like AI or what have you, adopting that technology in a fruitful manner maybe has yet to be seen, because there's nobody really out there kind of educating everybody on what's the best way to do this. We're all just kind of figuring out as we get along. But there's not really a YouTube video for us to kind of figure out, but we're just kind of piecing together through the forums or at the different conferences, conventions that we're at to kind of make the best of it and make our best educated guess. But over time, what we're going to run into is there's going to be experts that really populate, pop up and populate the industry for us to kind of lean on to get better understanding of it, whether it's BIM or AI or, right. You name it, IoT, pick your buzzword here, digital twin, whatever, to get to a point where we can actually hand over and be up and running in the shortest amount of time, create the deliverables that we need to, but actually make meaningful impacts to ourselves as a business thinking about the longevity, not just as a getting through this project because it's a requirement.
Well, I think moving forward, I think the business is in providing workflows, right? And kind of educating your people or whoever you're selling it to, because it's moving too fast. I tell people all the time, or vendors, I go, listen, help me out with the workflow. You don't need to sell me a license. It'll go. It'll sell.
Yep. Yep.
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that's where we're at with a lot of this. I think a lot of people understand enough to know that they need to start thinking differently. And I think a lot of companies and smaller businesses, I think smaller businesses are different in the sense that they're probably younger and understand technology a little bit better and aren't locked down by so much history. But they look for guidance. They're looking to do the right thing and how they're going to do that, right? And I think the most successful companies are going to be the ones that are a little bit honest and say, yeah, we'll train you. We'll set some things up for you and help you develop what these goals are for you, because people, companies don't know what those are.
The best thing a company could do is to hire somebody like yourself, or yourself in general, just hire you or somebody like you, if that's possible, let's clone you, to get to a point where they can understand the workflows and ask the right questions. Cause that's half the battle, is just asking the questions.
You don't know what you don't know.
Exactly. How, right. Well, even you might not know how this will affect their business, but you at least know the questions to ask, having gone through it. And the 7 million different iterations you've gone through similar things in the past, to ask the right questions.
Yes, sir. Yeah. Knowledge is half the battle. G.I. Joe.
G.I. Joe. Oh, sorry, man. with that, man, I do have a question to ask you, Carlos. Before we part ways and give this a wrap, man. Looking at the future of technology in our industry, whether that's on the manufacturing and construction or even the merging of the two, what are some pitfalls that you're, concerned about, or even some, golden arches at the end of the rainbow, I guess, so to speak, that you're actually looking forward to?
Ooh, that's a good question. So, the pitfalls I think are always going to be, and we briefly touched on it, is how everybody talks about, we want to do this thing. But they're not necessarily ready to do that thing. Once once they start understanding the commitment it requires, the money it might require, I think that scares a lot of businesses away. But they don't have that much of a choice either, right? So I think there's a lot of education that needs to happen. But I do think that's one of the pitfalls. You know, I think a lot of companies are into buying solutions right now, and that's not necessarily the correct solution to put everything together.
Well, many companies also get hung up on that front-loaded cost too. They think about, oh my God, this cost me X. But what you do in your position is you actually solve the ROI equation, where it's like, yes, it will cost you X, but we're going to transform and not only solve ROI here, like win you some improvements and efficiencies and time savings and all that stuff to make up for this, but it's going to position you to be a better business going forward, so that you're going to make more informed, better informed decisions going forward. So it's transformational. And I think that's the part that you bring to the table to kind of harness this.
That's funny. That's what I talk about. I talk about transformation, not so much about, digital 4.0 and all these things that are going out there. I talk about efficiencies. I talk about reliability. I talk about repeatability and what those numbers might look like in the future compared to what they look like now. Safety is a big issue with every, AEC and manufacturing. Safety is always a winner, and it's always been a win-win for me. And I start small. I start small where the numbers are small, but you can always multiply those by 10 plants, right? So that's you have to break it down to a number that's manageable for different industries and that they understand, On the plus side, I think, listen, there's so much technology out there that this is not going to slow down for quite a bit. I think at the rate that it's moving, how all of these technologies are coming together right now, the connectability between different applications now, it's going to be very interesting for a bit.
Which is great for our sector. Another shining light here is that it's going to take the right people to understand how to actually make the data meaningful, connect the data, use all the new technologies out there. And while construction has historically been a laggard, I think we were behind agriculture at one point. We've gotten to a point now where it's like we've been inundated. Like there are big market sectors that are, moving in our area. Like the big financial, the Black Rocks of the world or whoever are starting to fund so much in our industry. And we're starting to see so much of this angel investment, all this technology adoption, all these really use cases actually start to pop up and actually prove themselves. There's a lot of lies out there. I'll tell you that, there's a lot of like, hey, we do this, but actually they fall on this niche. But at the end of the day, there's so much to focus on that solves each individual niche that there's just so much out there. It's exciting to actually get to this point where we actually have options and solutions instead of just, hey, this is all that's available. So BlackBerry, I was a BlackBerry user for many years. I loved it. You open a BlackBerry app store, there's like nothing there, right? You try to sideload Google if you can. There's like nothing you can do on a BlackBerry other than secure message, and the form factor was amazing. But you get to Google or an iPhone, and that app store opens up all your worlds. That suddenly you're like, oh my God, they got an app for this, they got an app for this, they got an app for this. It's amazing. I think that's where we're at in construction is there's a solution for almost everything. And if there isn't a solution, you're not the only person that's thinking about that. Somebody else is thinking about that and coming up with a fix, whether that's through Dynamo or an integration or what have you.
I also think it's going to be, this is, my opinion, of course, but I also, just kind of going back to a lot of our previous points in this podcast, I think it's going to be somebody outside of the construction industry that comes in and gives us a different look. It's going to be the people that come from the financial industries or from the different industries that are more technologically advanced than we are in construction, and actually bringing those ideals over as they translate industries. They come over and bring these different ideas. People coming in from college that maybe, they started with a certain major and wound up in construction management, whatever it is. I really think it's going to be the oddballs that really help change the industry, because the people that have been doing it for 20, 30, 40 years, I mean, yes, we found the path and the recipe for success, but it's hard to change something that you've been doing for so long. However, when you get someone with a brand new perspective that can bring this in, and an environment that is open to change and open to adapting, then I think you have a recipe for success. I really do. All right. All right. Hey, guys. So I think we're going to go ahead and wrap up.
I think, again, to those that can't, you know, obviously aren't seeing this thread that are listening, we need 4 more hours to continue this conversation, and maybe there'll be a part 2 or part 3 or even a part 4 of this. But I think for the sake of sanity and
I'm down
Monday
for
night,
a cookie shot, though. I whatever that is, I'm 100% down for that.
we can come up with some concoction to make our chat come to life here. But with that, though, you know, Carlos, I just want to say thank you, man. It's been exceptional to have you as a guest. I don't know about you guys, but I finished 4 Tallboy Michelob Ultras, which is probably like equivalent to really 1.5 beers. But hey, it did its job. So Carlos, thank you, my friend. I appreciate it. Next time I'll have some whiskey, we'll join you. And we'll probably do an in-person, because this will be more fun in person with you, me, and Rob.
Yeah, dude.
All right. To our listeners, you know how to find us, obviously, and tune into future podcasts. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Carlos.